Welcome to the School Sucks Project,
a podcast, YouTube channel, and an online community
dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense. Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get infographics, comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments. And here's Brett.
When you capture something that's based on your intuition, this feels something important to capture. When you go back to it, it's because intuitively you were looking for information on something. And so this note is now valuable, proving itself valuable again to you. When you bold passages, when you highlight passages, when you summarize, when you then reuse that information, those are all done based on your intuition, not some sort of set of analytical rules, which I think is really powerful. One, because as he talks about that system, what is it? System two is the analytical thinking.
Yep.
That system two thinking is expensive, neurologically, emotionally, physiologically, opportunity-wise.
Time, yep.
And so we want to kind of do as little of that as possible and save all of our capacity for that, for stuff that's really important. And also, too, like, the more we can get into that intuitive, subconscious, level one fast thinking, the more we can get to having things in our unconsciously competent level of thinking, the better.
What if we were on the show? See tranquility. Let's drink and lose the clothes. I hope you would agree. And what would we find there? Who knows? Smokescapes, oceans, and no clothes.
This is Brett. Today is Monday, March 15th. Very first thing I want to do today is say thank you to the folks who stepped up after my encouragement in the last show and joined us either on Patreon or on Locals. Now that that's out of the way, let's talk about part two with my friend Alex Bell on Tiago Forte's Building a Second Brain Organization and Productivity Methodology. Today we are going to be talking about project management. Have you ever been one of these people that collects everything and then organizes it all and then doesn't do anything with it? What a cruel joke you've played on yourself. Today we're going to talk about how to address that based on what Alex has learned and implemented from Building a Second Brain's guidance on project management. And with that, we'll move right into the show. I'll forego announcements. I will tell you I've got Kevin Geary coming up soon to stir some shit. If you want to learn more about Alex, his website is alexgbell.com. Thanks for listening, and here we go.
Now when the sun come up, I'll be there to say what up in the morning. Brush my teeth, find that clip I've been looking for since last night. I feel so caught up in the bud. I float somehow in my bedroom. Turn around, see myself in the mirror. I guess I'm cool. And those happy thoughts in my head. I'm feeling like I'm Peter Pan. Minus the tights and the berries. Happy to see how far I've come to the same place. It began my dreams, imagination. Perfectly at peace, so I move along a bit higher. I'll be up a bit away, up a bit away.
Alex, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back, Brett.
Now, obviously, we cannot cover this entire methodology in two shows, but what I wanted to do was pique people's interest, especially if there are folks out there who feel like they have a need for an update or a simplification, maybe. Something, I have good news about simplification for you, by the way,
yeah,
based on our last show. But I wanted to introduce this topic and, like the last show, give people a couple of valuable takeaways that they could implement pretty much right after listening to this show or look for ways to integrate into what they're already doing. But today's discussion is more comprehensive, I would say. We're certainly not going to be able to go through all of this, but I just wanted to focus on key aspects of like setup and action here. One of the things that was originally appealing about Building a Second Brain, again, if David Allen was listening to this, he would say, Brett, you're a real thorn in my side. You know, you're going to say that, oh, you like Building a Second Brain because it's more about moving things towards completion. What do you think getting things done is?
It's literally in the title of the book.
It's literally in the title of the book. You know, one of the things that I noticed when I was looking over everything that I had set up in Evernote last year was I have a lot of projects that are just poorly defined.
Yeah.
And not well managed at all. And the name of the product project, doesn't even have an action word in it. It'll just be called website.
Yeah. Yep.
It's one of the first things that David Allen warned against, and I didn't listen. So, David, we get it. Or friends of David who listen and tell David about this. We get it. I did not fully implement, or at one point if I did, I have not stuck with it as well as I should have. But do you know anything about why Forte wanted to build his own system separate?
I don't, to be honest. As I mentioned in the last show, started getting into how do I connect my day-to-day to something broader. So I'm less kind of like, there's a hunting term for it that's escaping me now, but it's like target locked maybe. That's not it, but it's basically like I'm so zoomed in on the thing immediately in front of me that I lose the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Which I think doing that in the context of actually getting stuff done is much better than being, in my mind right now, one of those people who has all the ideas and never actually does anything.
Yeah.
I think it's better to be doing stuff, but too narrowly focused and maybe doing the wrong stuff than it is to be too broad and not doing anything and or just chasing shiny objects and working on something for 2 days while you're excited about it and then stopping.
Right.
So to try to alleviate, okay, cool, I've done a good job of getting stuff done, but now I think I might be kind of too focused in on immediately in front of me targets.
Happens to me all the time, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's part of the challenge of doing work that's not just take one input, combine it with something, make an output. Yeah. So connecting the bigger thing with Taylor Pearson. And then for whatever reason, just the concept, building a second brain, heard you mention it on your show once or twice, as you mentioned, after hearing about it from Moritz, and just started diving into actual material, which is one of the things that Tiago actually recommends, particularly in this, what we're about to talk about, just-in-time project management. He talks about wrestling with the material, actually engaging with a project, pieces of knowledge instead of just consuming stuff.
Right.
And so for me, that was exactly what it was. I just went right for the throat of here's this pair system, here's this progressive summarization, here's this just-in-time project management. Honestly, don't know much about the guy outside of what I've read.
He's mysterious.
Yeah.
Ah, interesting. So if people are brand new to this and you've come to listen to School Sucks for some other reason, or you're a fairly new listener, so you're like, yes, this is interesting, an organization and productivity system. I need one of these. I just wanted to run through some of the selling points that Forte lays out. And of course, there is a lot of overlap with GTD, which we've talked about before. But number one, consistently move your projects and goals to completion. Number two, transform personal knowledge into income. Number three, uncover unexpected patterns and connections between ideas. We talked about that a little bit last time. Of course, this is one of the biggest ones. Reduce stress and information overload. Develop valuable expertise, specialized knowledge, and skills to deploy in a new job, career, or business. Cultivate a collection of valuable knowledge and insights over time without having to follow rigid, time-consuming rules. And seven, unlock the full value of the wealth of learning resources all around you. Meaning having a effective way, but a purposeful way to capture more things. So taking captures that you do in an intentional way, into a collection, turning that collection into a project and turning that project into something that is done. So,
yeah. And I think the biggest thing that was, as I dove in, kind of reaffirmed my interest in doing this was definitely that, as we talked about last time, I have 3,000 some notes in my Evernote, and I am okay with that being basically just an archive at this point because I don't ever look at those. I don't process them, but I wanted something more where it's like, okay, I don't want to just keep shoving stuff away into folders and files and notebook systems,
right,
and not be able to get something out of it. And I think part of that is definitely a habit of when I'm like taking on a new project or sub project or task, the instinct is go to DuckDuckGo.
Yeah,
Google it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But so there's a habit there of going there instead of to my like personal knowledge system. But part of the reason why I don't go to my personal knowledge system is because it's not organized and set up in a way that makes it easy to kind of discover those unexpected patterns, those related notes as I need them. And part of why it's that way is because with a getting things done sort of approach with this old model of create this sort of big, heavy process upfront and first. I think I never developed something that really worked for me because it was like such a cumbersome thing to just simply organize notes and think about tagging structures and that sort of thing, rather than having a system that was like just enough system to make it so I can discover things.
Yeah.
And then be able to discover them when I need them to help kind of exponentially grow my knowledge over time, instead of almost starting from scratch every time I retake on some piece of information.
Right. So the good news that I have is I now have one project's notebook stack.
Perfect.
One.
Perfect.
And I also, I have half as many tab groups in my browser.
You didn't need them.
I didn't need them. I didn't need them. So the simplification is underway. It feels great. And that relates loosely to this concept of just-in-time project management. Now, I had only known just-in-time as a production term. How would you describe what it means in Forte's term?
Yeah, so I actually, I will answer your question, but I do want to, in the spirit of some of the things Tiago talks about,
sure.
just quickly go over para and progressive summarization again.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is a good habit of making intermediate packets and placeholders, which is something we'll talk about in the next few minutes. So progressive summarization, I actually did some notes using his technique, made a summary of this stuff, so it'll be nice and easy. Principles I pulled out of that are just organize opportunistically, just adding layers to your notes as you're already looking at those notes for something else. Don't spend 2 hours up front trying to make the perfect, most discoverable, most comprehensible note on something the first time. Make your notes compressed so that you can discover them easily, but also maintaining the context so that if you forget kind of what this highlight or what this bolded point means, you can kind of expand out a bit and read.
So this is kind of like the idea. There's kind of like almost an SEO component to this in note discoverability, right? Where we talked about one of the things that's tricky about producing a podcast where you have somebody on and you talk for an hour and a half is you could have five or six topics. And then at the end, all you have as like an umbrella that connects everything is that person's name.
Yep.
You know, but if you had a guy, you know how people have a guy?
For many things.
Oh, yeah. And it's just true. If you had a guy who would take the podcast and like cut it up into five YouTube clips, then those are optimized for discovery because they can each be focused on one specific topic.
Yep.
Right. So same. It's just the highlight idea of noting would be that instead of grabbing one giant piece of information, you're grabbing it strategically. Like with the Evernote web clipper, you can highlight a section like we talked about last time and just pull one excerpt that then you can annotate or label in a way that makes it more retrievable later.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And that's, I think, a perfect way from a podcast, if you are the producer of said podcast, to kind of use that progressive summarization highlight sort of technique.
Right.
Of course, a way you could do that for yourself if you're not the producer is just write down like timestamps and a couple quick thoughts or something like that. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of come back to it later. The last key principle for me that I pulled out of progressive summarization was that train and use your intuition thing. So one of the things he talks about throughout that series is the technique of progressive summarization. When you capture something, that's based on your intuition. This feels something important to capture. When you go back to it, it's because intuitively you were looking for information on something. And so this note is now valuable, proving itself valuable again to you. When you bold passages, when you highlight passages, when you summarize, when you then reuse that information, those are all done based on your intuition, not some sort of set of analytical rules, which I think is really powerful. One, because as he talks about that system, what is it? System two is the analytical thinking.
Yep.
That system two thinking is expensive neurologically, emotionally, physiologically, opportunity-wise.
Time, yep, sure.
And so we want to kind of do as little of that as possible and save all of our capacity for that, for stuff that's really important. And also, too, like the more we can get into that intuitive, subconscious, level one fast thinking, the more we can get to having things in our unconsciously competent level of thinking, the better. Just to quickly go over the kind of layers of the system of progressive summarization, number zero is that original source, that blog post, that podcast, that YouTube video from which you start progressive summarization by layer one, making your personal capture.
Yeah.
Which could be just simply literally clipping it from the web using Evernote Web Clipper.
Yep.
That's okay. I think that's better. If your intuition feels capture the thing, and that's the easiest way to do it. What I've actually started doing as I was literally making my notes for this episode was I would just literally copy and paste sections of his blog post into my Google Doc here that I have.
Yeah.
When I first did the notes for last episode, I was literally typing my own thoughts,
yeah,
which I think is valid too, but it was just faster to kind of clip his stuff that felt interesting.
I think there's a kind of flow that relates to this, and not flow exactly in the terms that he talks about, but like knowing the time available and the context of what you're doing really helps as you go through these progressive summarization stages as far as what you need to do, especially initially, right? Like I need this many things for a project that's this size. And right now, all I need to do is know that I have this for the future, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And it also depends on like the place you're at with that thing, like how much you need to engage with it at that moment. So there's, I guess there's lots of things that could be running in the background that could be in your awareness, so to speak, that would determine how what shows up as intuition actually functions.
Yeah. And he dives a lot more into two things related to what you just said in the Just in Time series. One of which is this concept of divergence and convergence when it comes to projects. So divergence, you're starting from your beginning point where you're kind of zeroed in as a point of, I'm a person who is starting a journey of learning and discovery and creation mm-hmm. and don't know what I need to ultimately create a product. You diverge from there by just researching, outlining, absorbing information, organizing it, collecting it. And then at some point, you start the convergence process of taking all this stuff that you collected, which is going to be way more than you're ultimately going to use in your final product. And you converge from that wide breadth point back down into the podcast, the project, the blog post, whatever yeah. it might be.
So grammar to logic, if I dare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Something like that. The other thing too that he talks about is kind of taking advantage of states of mind and how various states of mind, which kind of fuel the, as David Allen puts it very technically, the reticular activating system, the things that we're going to look at and notice and highlight
yeah.
depends on if you're feeling really happy and energetic and expansive.
Yes. Yeah.
You're going to notice a lot of things. If you're feeling really like angry and like I'm behind, you're going to be much more apt to have your subconscious focusing you towards, I need to just find the important pieces out of all this bullshit right now because I need to get something done. And so taking advantage of those kind of states of being that kind of signal to us consciously the shifts in our sort of subconscious landscape
yeah.
lets us kind of maximize the way we can use that massive amount of subconscious power that we have by kind of saying, okay, if I'm feeling really just like excited about a new thing, I'm just going to diverge and consume as much as I can. If I'm feeling really angry and upset with myself because I feel like I've been wasting my time just gathering resources, I'm going to take advantage of that by using that energy and that subconscious signal to focus myself on converging into actually producing something from this.
Got it. So why does he use the term just in time? Do you know about this as a production term, right? Just in time production?
Yep.
That like Toyota uses?
Yeah, I do. I do. The just-in-time concept, I think as to answer your question, as it applies to this project management stuff, I think it's overall trying to basically there's a couple of principles that I pulled out here, and the ones that apply to that question are keeping your work kind of small and discrete packets, evolving your work and deliverables over time, and kind of working quickly within your mental workspace.
Yeah.
The two big reasons for that I've gotten from what I've read from him is one, information is perishable. Mm-hmm. There's the accuracy of that information can change. Obviously, like the world used to be flat, and then some people figured out that it wasn't actually flat. And so now if you're still stuck in some big project about the science fair, here's how the earth is flat, then you're going to miss out on stuff. our memory, the relevance of that information is also perishable. Something you might be really excited about one day, you're not the next. And maybe it's valid, like that was just a one day lark thing.
Yeah.
And so that information isn't relevant anymore. The awareness piece of it too. So if you're really deep into one particular project for a blog post, and then you leave that for a week or two, all this stuff about certain facts and certain combinations of ideas and synthesizing that you were doing in your head, that gets dropped because you're focusing on other things.
Right.
And so kind of keeping things small and tight and working quickly lets you maximize kind of taking advantage of the information that's in front of you in notes, but also kind of loaded into your head as well.
It also seems to suggest something against like stockpiling supply in a way. We've been stockpiling supply in Evernote.
Oh, yeah.
For just in case project management, yep. Right? But for most of it, there is no case where it's coming up. And when you talk about information being outdated, even the environment surrounding what you're doing is changing, where the entire purpose of your project, right? Like School Sucks project might have to adapt to a world that is, you know, much different in 2013 than it was in 2010. And it is way different in 2020 than it was, you know, in 2013. So you would find that even if a lot of stuff wasn't completely like outdated information, it doesn't serve you anymore.
Yep.
So you've stockpiled. The idea is like open, move, and close, right? Like that's kind of a big part of it.
Yeah.
While the iron is hot, so to speak.
Yep. Yeah. And that's where I think he really struck me. Like he highlighted the value of information is perishable, because the accuracy piece, like for sure applies, but depending on what you're doing, it's less, more and less so. Example from last time, Tim Ferriss's 4-hour work week. In general, the idea of testing your headlines for your book,
yeah,
via like some sort of paid ad, that strategy still applies. The specific technique of like he used Google AdWords, that still specifically might work, but it doesn't work the same way as it did when he did it, just because Google's tool evolved. But the value to you, like you just kind of described, stuff that we were thinking about working on 5 years ago,
yeah,
doesn't necessarily apply. I have a whole bunch of notes on Kabbalah. Ooh, call myself out. Kabbalah, the tree of life, some very esoteric mystical stuff. I still like aliens and conspiracy theories and mysticism. Like that stuff is fun for me, but it's more like intellectual candy.
Yeah.
I appreciate that now. And so I like just any of that stuff that I collected, mostly irrelevant, but it's nice to have it. And I think that's part of the power of the para method of organization, is like keep things, like keep your system really thin. You've got these four projects, areas, resources, archive, notebooks. They're arranged according to their actionability. And so you can capture everything and just make sure they, over time, as you're going through them, something might have been a project note, eventually moves to your archive. So you can always have the stuff that you capture, and you can kind of trust that you have it, and you can get that benefit. But then you can kind of keep notes and keep your attention on the notes and notebooks that are actually actionable to you for now based on that organization system.
Gotcha. You know, I try to pride myself on creating evergreen content versus disposable content.
Yeah.
Like so much of the content that shows up online every day is just disposable within 24 or 48 hours.
Yep.
You know, there's also something that, you know, this is preferable in a lot of ways to getting things done. I'm sorry. But one of the things I remember sticking out most about getting things done in the capture was the idea of someday maybe.
Yeah.
You know, like someday maybe is a huge black hole. It's one of the terms David Allen uses for a categorization, right? Like capture this, but just someday maybe it. And you find that it kind of eats up RAM the more stuff that accumulates, almost in like the subtle psychic way of, look at all these things that I'm not executing on. You know, it is kind of like it's a sphere of control sort of thing, where an unorganized, non-lean system is actually having a negative emotional impact on you the more stuff that accumulates there that's not actionable. The same way like watching the news and seeing a bunch of things that you have no power over, you could never change, you could never even participate in. Right.
Yeah. That's one thing that he talks about in this just in time, is like having bulky processes just builds this layer of grime that just slows down your speed, slows down your motivation, hinders you in getting things done. But I think like I still have someday maybe lists, and I think it fits into para. And I think para, dare I use the super cliche, and I sound like a fruity intellectual word, the elegance of para, lets you have the best of both worlds. You can capture those ideas, keep those ideas, but also not let them slow you down. So the way that I've done that is in that area's sort of notebook collection of someday maybe projects, I'll put that inside of there. So I've got my areas just high level. That's like, for me, health, business, relationships, and then something I call eudaimonia, which is just kind of happiness, life stuff. It kind of catches all for admin work and hobbies and stuff like that.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And so inside of those kind of first level, those second level tiers, we've got areas, and then we've got those four types of areas that I'm broadly responsible for. I have that someday maybe project list. But again, with this idea of organizing opportunistically, I feel completely fine with not looking at those and also not acting on any of those. Because if, as he introduces in this Just in Time series, I'm starting to feel like I'm in the mode where I'm looking for that next thing, that will be the time that I know, hey, don't have a project, looking for the next thing, feel that that's the mode that I'm in right now. Mm-hmm. How about go to your Someday Maybe lists in your areas, folders, and I bet you'll find something good to do in there. And so you can capture those, you can hide them away, and you can feel zero levels of guilt by not looking at them regularly, which is something that David Allen does suggest, that yep. is a process bulkiness that doesn't need to be there. But it's there for you when you need them. And when you do need them, that's when having that Someday Maybe file thing filed away can really trigger those unexpected patterns, can trigger that burst of motivation as you kind of remember, oh yeah, 6 months ago, I had an idea to do this and I was not anywhere near ready to do it. But now this thing, that thing, the other thing happened. And now that I'm looking at this again, like, this is the perfect time to move this from Someday Maybe into active projects.
Yeah. And that certainly is a possibility. Obviously, with the way the world is changing, it usually goes the other way, where you find that a lot of the stuff that is there is discardable. Because, yes, I mean, things might be evergreen in that they might always be relevant and useful, but you always, if you're doing content creation, do they align with what people want at a certain time, right? So there are things that might stay valuable to some people, but not enough people to make it worth the execution.
Yep.
You know,
and
they
so
gotta go.
Para and Just in Time addresses that.
Yeah.
If you come back to your Someday Maybe list because you already have noticed I'm in a what's the next thing expansive kind of mode, and I'm looking at this list, and you see something in there that you're like, yeah, that's never going to be a good idea. Mm-hmm. Move it to your archives list.
Right.
Because that then lets you say, well, on that like 0.001% chance that I'm like, oh shit, 2 years from now and realize that that was a good idea, I've still got it.
Right.
In the overwhelmingly likely scenario where that really is never going to be a good idea, then it's hidden away in that archives folder that I basically never look at anyway. So I don't have to be weighed down by constantly seeing this thing.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So his series on his website on the Just-in-Time Project Management is enormous, continuing to expand. It's like 20-something parts.
He's 21, done
21
yeah.
parts. Now, is that complete?
I don't know. I didn't check the dates when I was reading this stuff. At one point, he did mention at the beginning of this book, so it feels like some of the stuff is probably fairly old now just because this was sitting in notes and it got remixed. Originally, at some point, he thought it was going to be a book and turn it into a blog series. So I don't know. But one thing I did notice with this, for what it's worth, is he split them up smaller. So like, let's say the last two series, the blog posts were like 4,000 words each. These ones are like 1,000 word each. So still much longer of a series, but they're a little bit more bite-sized.
Gotcha. So as far as our purposes today in giving people some takeaways that they could, you know, start implementing or start integrating, I think it's most important to just do an overview of the setting up and the doing the best we can, right? Like, so we've talked about the initial setup where you define something as a project, but then the sort of breaking it into the pieces you call discrete packets, he calls intermediate packets. Mm-hmm. Let's actually start there and talk about what is meant by that, creating these smaller reusable units.
Yeah, so I think we have this, it kind of is a continuation of this opportunistic sort of theme that he's got going on. And this discrete packets concept, it's interwoven into how it kind of fits with all the other pieces that he talks about. But it kind of gives you this base unit that lets you do one sort of main purpose within the context of being a human being. So the main purpose basically is this return on attention. Mm-hmm. Basically getting not just the most out of your time, but appreciating the kinds of attention and the level of attention that you have and getting the most out of that. And by keeping things small, it lets you kind of maximize that value in a lot of ways by letting you move faster and not weighing you down with doing a bunch of things that either are lower leverage or don't actually need to be done. So with this return on attention concept, he kind of thinks in terms of you're looking at primarily return on attention per what he calls a constraint unit, which is kind of a technical manufacturing term, but he applies it to basically, we have these different levels of focus. So we have different sort of states of mind, different moods, angry, energetic, confused, all that, those sorts of things. We also have different levels of focus. So like deep focus, most zoomed into something, mild, light, and then like just admin work, whatever,
right.
Doing the dishes. And so really our constraint is our primary constraint unit as far as how we're spending our attention is that deep focus, because it is the most limited. It takes a lot of time to get into that state of flow in order to kind of put all that we've got into something.
Right.
And so the idea of discrete packets is to make the work units that we do small enough so that we can take the most advantage of that flow state, which takes time to get into. There's this whole kind of peak of like first sitting down to work something. You got to make sure your outside environment set up. You got to get your mental environment set up, reviewing your notes and all that stuff. You got to get your emotional environment set up to then be able to, after the struggle of doing all that, get into a flow state. And so the smaller we can kind of make our work units, the more we can take advantage of that setup time and get more out of the flow state. We can have smaller pieces of work get into the flow state faster because it doesn't take as much setup time.
That's the intermediate packet. It's like you start with the plan of executing on one of these things in, say, a defined work session.
Not even necessarily defined is the way he puts it. Like he'll even talk about like reviewing an email for 2 minutes while you're waiting for the doctor.
Yeah.
It's like this sort of intermediate packet. The idea, I guess, of the intermediate packet is to have something that when you're done with whatever level of work session you're about to engage in, whether that's 2 minutes or 2 hours, to have a clear end to that piece.
Yeah.
That also lets you hook into the next thing. So like an example of an intermediate packet that I've used plenty of time is creating an outline for a blog post. And so that's something that like to write a whole blog post, let's say whatever, 2000 words, like if I know the subject pretty well, that's at least 3 or 4 hours worth of work still.
Yeah.
But I can get an outline done in 10 minutes.
Okay.
Maybe 30 minutes. And so by kind of defining, okay, this outline done thing, it does a couple of things. One, it lets me get a win so that I can kind of keep this motivation train going.
Yep.
Of having something that feels done, that is done. Also, an outline and the completion of it is a really solid step forward, because it is a piece of the broader process that does need to get completed. And it also gives me a clear starting point. So the next time that I start, I have shaved off time on getting reset up through that struggle to get into flow of setting up my mental environment, because the mental environment setup goes from trying to remember like all the resources of this project and where they were and what kind of some of the key ideas and stuff that I need to talk about for, like all that stuff, instead of taking an hour to remember and find those things and remember those things, I can get it done in 10 minutes by just looking over this outline and going from there.
Hi, this is Brett. You know, on a lot of the podcasts you listen to, there's a sudden interruption somewhere near the middle of the show where the host breaks in to tell you about socks or underwear. But here at School Sucks Project, we believe that the obtaining of comfortable socks and underwear is a kind of foundational life skill that should already be settled before tackling higher level endeavors like understanding the contents of this podcast. This is just one of the reasons why our podcast is never interrupted by advertising. But the most important reason is you, the listener. Our show is made possible by your support, and you can offer that support to keep us going and growing, and also in exchange for a plethora of entertaining and educational bonus content, including the Discomfort Zone Picture of the Month Club, the University Weekly Discussion Groups, and In Pursuit of Utopia, by going to patreon.com/schoolsucks or schoolsucksproject.locals.com. And now back to the show. I'm so sorry I did this. How annoying.
So one of the most accessible pieces of this, I think a lot of people have some knowledge of like Cal Newport's deep work concepts. He talks a lot about flow cycles, right? As like a really important piece in the doing. And we talked a little bit just about like setting this up for optimal execution. But could you talk about how this has worked for you in your actual doing so far? And like what it looks like as far as identifying the time to stress. This is like the discomfort zone we did, right? Where I said sometimes we got into an argument, not you and me, but me and Andrew got into an argument about Like sometimes it's just not the right time, and having the self-awareness to know when you should be doing certain things and to the time when you should be doing other things, right? That are like those lower leverage but have to get done type of things is a really important way to understand yourself as a worker. So how does it work for you as far as like you were familiar with deep work, you were familiar with these concepts. This was 2019 when we talked about that. So can you just talk a little bit about setting up and trying to achieve a flow state in your work?
I think as far as like going through and implementing this just-in-time project management stuff, I will say I literally just finished these notes this morning. So this is still kind of fresh stuff for me.
Yeah.
I'm still working on some level of application of it. But what I got from it was sort of a couple of things that I recognized I've already figured out for myself and started doing intuitively, and then sort of an affirmation of a couple of things that I've been somewhat consciously working towards, and now like feel a little more like I've got some ammo to let myself fuel that fire. So as far as like getting into flow, I haven't really tried to do that per se based on this material, but in the spirit of just subconsciously aiming for that, I think I have figured out the work in discrete packets thing over time. And so a couple of examples of that, one is like that outline piece that I mentioned to you. So I've gotten pretty good about having discrete packets that kind of break projects up into different like smaller subsets. So like for a blog post that starts with the research and outline, again, out of 3 or 4 hours for a typical blog post, that can be done in 30 minutes or so. And then there's drafting, which in between there, the way that I do an intermediate packet approach to that is I have my subheadings. So, right. So like for any given post, I might have, let's say, 5 subheadings. And so if I'm going to work on a post, I'm going to kind of work in terms of subheadings. So let's say I had about 2 hours that I dedicated to working on this post, I will make sure that like when that final sort of Pomodoro timer goes off, if I'm like 5 sentences away from getting to the next subheading, I will do that just to kind of give myself a clean stopping off point. I think that Pomodoro technique sort of is a way too. It's not exactly the same because the idea of discrete packets is kind of focused on the thing that you've created at the end, but there is a similar sort of work in smaller chunks rather than trying to blast through something with 4 like straight hours with the work. Another thing that I've started to layer in and I started to do intuitively was evolve deliverables over time, which is sort of an element of the discrete packets in that, like by breaking down projects into smaller sort of pieces and not trying to just think and work in terms of this one lump sum thing, it kind of lets you pull out things that aren't useful and either save them for later and do them at a better time because you're in a better mood or you have more time, you have more energy, or actually just drop them all.
Could you give an example of that in your work?
Example that just happened was a couple months ago, we published an updated design to one of the websites that I work on. There's a lot of different things that can go into that. Like there's content on individual pages. There are design elements for every page. There are design elements for certain pages. There are functional features for the backend editor. And I probably had a list of, all told, I probably had 100 or 150 different things to do, from updating pages, adding these features, that sort of thing, that I was working on between myself and the other person that was building. And we maybe got 70 of those things done.
Yeah.
60. And so by breaking it up into those individual packets, though, and then also kind of accepting this principle of projects evolve over time, it made it very easy for me to intentionally and consciously say, yeah, you know what? Like, we're getting up against this deadline and I can see what progress is being made. Like these 10 things, drop them. We'll do them later. Here's how we can, I would send a message to the guy I was working with and say, okay, let's do this, that, and the other thing. Basically telling him, here's where we can create an intermediate packet out of this thing so that I can pick it up later. We can pick it up later. So like, as an example, there's a sidebar on the website. That sidebar original idea was to have like 5 different pieces, like an author bio, like showing a video that's related to the post, a table of contents, and like a little sidebar ad. And it ended up with just like 2 of those things, like the table of contents and the little sidebar ad. And we saved those other things in a state where, like, okay, if we decide we want to add that video again later, we didn't throw away any code or anything. There's still a packet there to pick up. But because it was this packet that had its own sort of handles and it was discrete from this bigger, like, we just need a whole sidebar with these things, it was easy to kind of toss that aside and say, hey, we can evolve this project over time. We don't have to have every single feature at the beginning implemented.
So just prioritization.
Prioritization. But I think that that discrete analysis of thinking in terms of these packets that have their own individual sort of handles and stuff is important to that too, because if it's, again, website, if the whole, if all your thing that you're working on is make website, then it's harder. It's hard. You can't really see that, hey, here's this little piece of a website that can get tossed aside for later.
Okay. So another thing that you mentioned just in passing earlier on was setup. So environmental, emotional, mental.
Yep.
And can you talk about how you maybe, like in a workday, how do you, I guess some of those things are bigger term. Like your environment is always like more set up than, it's not like you have to start from scratch every day.
Yeah.
But a lot of this comes down to habit as well, I would think, in that you're in enough of a kind of a predictable routine where you know and can kind of set a clock to, hopefully, the mental and emotional setup for doing the most focused work.
Yes. And this also plugs into another idea of discrete packets too, is that, like, in this context of return on attention constraint units, how do we maximize our return on attention? One of the things that discrete packets can incorporate is creating discrete packets that save us or improve the quality or the effectiveness of our constraint units, our focused attention in the future. And so one of those things is an environment that has a certain setup that facilitates you working, as well as like discrete packets, like an outline. I have like an outline template for blog posts now.
Yep.
So anytime I go to a new website project with a new blog, I take this outline template, and it usually will need tweaking for the, because of various little particularities of this blog, but that general framework, I can tweak it in 10 minutes instead of having to spend 2 hours rethinking what to put in an outline, thinking through the particulars of this detail. And so that's a way that a discrete unit kind of gives this extra leverage on the time, the focus time that I spent creating that outline template saves me a lot of focus time in the future.
So like finding formulas when you can.
Yep.
Okay.
And so environmental setup is a similar thing, as well as like kind of mental setup for the day in general, let alone individual tasks. So for me, like environmental setup, it was actually something that I worked on in coming out here to hang out with you guys. My apartment I've lived in, and that is a project that has evolved over time, over the course of years, so that now like it's got a very particular setup. Pieces and parts of that setup got removed, added, exchanged, swapped over the course of years. And coming out here, I have to kind of reset that. And so I sort of started from, okay, what are the fundamental things? I thought through this before I came out here, like, okay, if I'm going through my morning routine, what do I need? No, I need my laptop and my mouse. Don't forget those. No, I'm going to want to have coffee at some point. No, I'm going to do meditation. So I need my little meditation heart rate variability thing.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to be reading on my phone. No, I'm going to be doing a little kettlebell workout. So I need a kettlebell. And basically thinking through those things, I set up the room so that now my meditation heart rate variability tool is in there. The kettlebell's in a certain spot. The laptop and mouse go and stay in a certain spot at the end of the day, so they're exactly where I need them to be in the morning. And so now that, that makes making that routine super easy, because it's like the stuff and the environment is in a spot where it takes almost no mental effort other than that initial thinking through and setting up time to activate these various pieces of my morning routine.
So something I picked up from you when we were in Florida at the beginning of the year was the power of habit, like where you put something.
Yeah.
Right. Cause I will just, you know, unconsciously toss, or it's been a bad habit, an unconscious habit for a long time, and not being able to find things.
Right? Yeah.
And so I felt like I developed a, this goes here and I know where it is kind of formula for what's on this screen in front of me, but not for my keys, you know? So when you talk about that physical environment setup, I'm also somebody who, you know, in 2017, I was on the road in a different place almost every night for 40 days. I spent a lot of the following year traveling, not being in one place for more than a couple of months. I've been fairly nomadic over the last 4 or 5 months, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even like changing my work environments in this place, you know? So that is, I think, a really, really valuable, like, because formulas are everything. Like a formula is, when you said a template or a repeatable system, but that is also like very much how our minds and our bodies work as well, right? And it's like, am I getting up at this time and doing these things? And I'm always like, I don't know, as much as I do it, I'm still really impressed with like the digital nomad who could just be in a different place every week and still make all of those things work.
Yeah, a lot of those people are probably running away from baggage and they're using the excitement of novelty to
by bragging about how few bags they have.
Yeah.
Like everything I have fits in 2 bags. Yep. Sorry, everyone.
So don't feel so bad.
That.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry to shit on you.
Moritz actually does that.
That's hilarious. So don't feel so bad. And I'm sorry that to try to make you feel better, I had to shit on the digital nomads. But the other thing too, because I have faced some similar things with traveling in the last few months.
Yeah.
I've, again, before I even encountered any, knew the guy's name was Tiago, I was doing this with this discrete packets concept of thinking of my day, and it's a fractal thing too, right? So I know my day sort of fractally, if I'm waking up in the same place I'm going to bed, is going to be morning routine, some level of working on projects, some level of stuff outside of that, eating food, evening routine, sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff outside of that will turn into traveling on some days. But still, there's a morning routine. There might a lot of times be some level of productive work, and then instead of amorphous, undefined stuff outside of work, it's now that time is filled with driving 6 hours to the next place. But then you fractal it down into morning routine. It's thinking through discrete packets, like my morning routine, wake up and make coffee counts as a discrete packet. Right now that has making the bed, which sleeping on an air mattress is much more intensive than when I'm at home. Sleeping on my futon, making the bed is folding the sheet and calling it a day. But they're still basically this sort of 15 minutes, hey, like come to awareness, get out of bed, go pee, make some coffee. Other discrete packet, journaling, discrete packet, reading stuff like Tiago Forte's blog, discrete packet, meditating, discrete packet, kettlebell workout.
Yeah.
And so using those, it's like, okay, if I'm going to be on the road and let's say I need to get up and leave pretty quickly within the time that I come up, here's my morning routine, standard discrete packets. I have an hour. Okay, that means I have time to make coffee. It means I have time to journal. And then I have time for like one of those other things. I'm going to call it meditation. Hit the road. Let's say I have time for 15 minutes. Okay, then the only discrete packet in my morning routine I get to use is wake up and make coffee. Maybe I swap coffee for a Monster. I take the health cost at the benefit of being able to meditate before I need to leave.
Time, right.
Yeah, so that's something where it's really helpful to have these discrete packets. Individual modules. He calls it component thinking, Tiago does, where you can kind of move things around and you can break down when you need to converge on it, when you need to diverge from your normal routine and converge on a separate routine.
Ah, to not be too rigid. So like yeah. Contrast that to like habit stacking, mm-hmm. which is kind of like how I have things set up,
mm-hmm.
where it's like get up, make coffee, tea, then make bed, right? Or then hydrate, then make bed,
yeah.
Then set up my day, review calendar. And it actually says like on this checklist, like I love
if
checklists,
this, then.
Right? No, yep. This, then this. And I even have like increments of time that they should take, right? Well, if you hit a snag, this really gets fucked,
mm-hmm.
right? So I've actually gotten into this process of forgiveness where, you know, a morning routine on Wednesday is a bunch of stuff just crossed off, just X through. And then there's a note that I had stayed in somewhere else the previous night,
yep.
you know? So that is a permission to balance life in a way where like today this will not be executed. But there are foundational things like journaling, right? Like to journal every single day. But I, if I'm not here one night, my bed's still made for the next day. And it's not a crisis if it's not this habit stack being executed exactly as I planned.
Yep.
So I think there is like an aspiration that should at least, for me anyway, I mean, you might find something else works better, but to have something written down as being aspirational, it's like, ideally, this is how I'd like to execute things. But if I don't, thinking about these things more modularly is more and more acceptable because life necessitates that sometimes.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So the component thinking, again, that's a just-in-time manufacturing, actually making physical products like cars technique. And also something you mentioned there too, kind of touches on this concept Tiago talks about, again, for manufacturing, of the critical path. The example he uses is making coffee in the morning. So we don't, and a mistake it sounds like you've mentally kind of made for yourself is ascribing things to a critical path that don't need to, that is not the critical path. So the example with coffee making is if you take all the different tasks of coffee making, boiling water, grinding beans, actually brewing the coffee, getting your cup of coffee together, you might say, okay, boil water.
Mm-hmm.
And then when boiling water is done, grind beans. And then when beans are grinded, put them in the coffee maker. And then when they're in the coffee maker, put the hot water in.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that's not, the grinding the beans is not dependent on the water being boiled, but the ground beans being in the coffee maker is dependent on the beans being ground. And then
You're right.
Think about time too, of like, while the water's boiling, you can do these other things. So similarly, yeah, the habit stacking, I think the value of that is reducing that struggle stage to get into flow, is having a set routine that you don't have to think about to save yourself that mental setup time.
Mm-hmm.
But the discrete packet concept lets you modularize, make components out of your routine so you can make decisions that are based on your context as it changes.
Mm-hmm.
And that also kind of gets into too, like I mentioned earlier, sort of doing a couple things already intuitively and then also getting some ammo to let myself further kind of explore a new way of being that hopefully is a happier one for me, which is letting your states of mind or your environmental context be legitimate and informing you with what you do.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have your morning routine modularized into these five things, and you allow, and you know that that system allows for dropping certain components when needed, then when you wake up somewhere else and three out of those five things are not available to you, then you can still do those two things. And that's your morning routine today. And that is perfectly acceptable because you're this person who's flowing with your environment and your state of mind rather than this person who has to constantly be forging this path through the jungle, no matter like how dense it gets.
I just want to say, when you said when you wake up somewhere else, I just want to point out that it was intentional. It was more like I went to bed somewhere else.
Yeah.
Like when you wake up
somebody
somewhere
didn't
else.
Move you in the middle of the night.
It sounds kind of like I'm a victim of circumstance or maybe of myself. All right. So there's something that's related, even though it's not like an integral part of this system, which would be like a calendar when we're talking about things being modular. So Andrew gave me this. I'm going to grab it. The Intention Journal by Brandon Turner from Bigger Pockets. And in this, it wants you to write out a daily schedule like this.
Yeah.
Every day. Now, I used this for 2 days and I was like, fuck this.
Yeah. No,
because
that's terrible.
It's not, once you do that, once you do it in a pen, maybe you're supposed to use a pencil. I didn't read that. It's no longer modular. And Google, I mean, I don't know what you use for a calendar, if you use Outlook or whatever, but Google Calendar is modular and forgiving. Every day changes. Almost no day goes exactly according to plan. So I like being, and I don't know if you like plan blocks of work, like that kind of time management, if you're like block scheduling your time, but having, again, a kind of aspiration, and I've been doing this with some breaks for a couple years now, having some kind of aspiration for what a day should look like. And then, you know, also trying to be like in David Allen's or Bruce Lee's concept of mind like water and body and schedule like water, things change and things can be moved around and you still have an accurate record of what your day looks like. So I don't know if you do anything like that with your like visualizing your time that way.
I definitely do not schedule things to a calendar except literally like
appointments.
We're doing an appointment now.
Yeah.
I think again, back to one of the things he talked about in, I think the progressive summarization series was this concept of like recognition being powerful and easier for our brains than remembering. I recognized that I was taking advantage of that thin hierarchies principle he talked about in Para already. And so thin hierarchies being just enough system to give you some rails and some constraints to keep you on a path forward, whatever that means.
But not to
but not
you
so much that it bogs
patient.
You down.
Yeah.
Yeah. And makes you a mental patient. And the thing that's,
or somebody masturbating in public to yeah. productivity and organization.
Productivity, organization, waking up in strange places.
Just with your pants down.
Pants down, cum everywhere. Yeah, yeah. It's a David Allen wet dream. That's the yeah. end of that short story. But I think this is really, I'm really curious and excited to see where this concept takes me going forward. This taking advantage of your natural states of motivation, states of mind, is going to take me, because I, a couple of years ago was when I first intuitively discovered this. Started 2019, a couple months in, thought through like three general directional sort of goals, like have this many clients, have this kind of income kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't make any specific plans, didn't try. And then like August or September, I realized I had the number of clients I'd aimed for. I had the income I'd aimed for. The states of mind thinking of, and this thin hierarchy, this discrete packets, keep your system thin and light as possible. Try to work and think in these small individual units that can be remixed and reused as needed. And then use those to take advantage of your natural states of motivation. The thing that Tiago talks about is, a state of mind like flow is hard to get into because it does have costs. Neurochemically, your brain can't sustain that. Physiologically, the energy levels, evolutionarily, to focus on something very specifically for too long opens you up to tiger attacks. Opportunity cost wise, you focus on the wrong thing for too long, you could cost yourself big. And so the kind of resistance to get into certain, to get into deep focus is very helpful to like, hey, is this worth doing? And so that doesn't come very often, but also like the moods too. So again, state of focus, level of focus, different from your mood being being kind of more energetic and expansive versus being more really on fire to get something done, as two examples. Those naturally, like they're temporary, they're hard to produce, they're unpredictable. You don't exactly know when they're going to come to you. But because of those two things, they're really valuable, because if you can really leverage your states of mind well,
yeah.
that's a very big competitive advantage in whatever you're doing. And they're high leverage too, because if you are in a, wow, I'm thinking through these million new ideas state of mind, and you lean into that, it's so much easier to do the brainstorming and the research and those sort of things to come up with some really great new idea to then act on. Versus if you're in really get shit done kind of mode, because you really do need to get something done and your subconscious is telling
you're locked
that,
in. Yeah. You're,
and you try to force yourself out of that, it's going to be so much harder to think expansively.
And you're missing all kinds of opportunities. That happens to me a lot, where I'll find myself in a situation and go, gosh, I just wish I had more time because this could be so much more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that happens all the time. That happened today. That happened with this.
Yeah.
I was like, geez, why didn't I do a deeper dive on this 2 years ago? You know, I could be an expert by now.
Yeah.
Instead of somebody trying to like implement it piecemeal.
Yep.
But because we are a little bit pressed for time, with a lot happening today, your last day in Western PA here, is there any other easily implementable takeaways that you would want to share with people?
Yeah, I think so. Let's do a quick summary of some of the principles I extracted, and we've
sure.
talked about
yeah.
most of them. And then let's also cover some specific workflow strategies that
yes.
Tiago talks about. So yeah, first on the general principles, return on attention per constraint unit, a constraint unit being your focus, deep focus time. That's the best way to analyze how we should spend our time. Working fast is critical, one, because information, the value of information is perishable to us, not only because it could become inaccurate, but just our awareness and memory of it fades. It's also critical too for maintaining motivation. You want to keep getting quick little wins for yourself so that you keep yourself engaged in doing stuff and don't get bogged down in system and doubt. Because of that, keep your work in small, discrete packets so that you can feel that sense of accomplishment, work fast, and also kind of set yourself up for success in the future by leaving yourself a good starting off point for the next time you come back to this discrete packet of work. Let your deliverables and projects evolve over time. You don't need all the features, you don't need the full plan. He even says you don't need a purpose to something later. Like, you don't necessarily need to know exactly what this blog post template is going to be applied to,
mm-hmm.
to know that having a template for a blog post that you're probably going to do more than once is going to be
things
useful.
You can plug into it somewhere.
Yep. Yeah. And then that last big one for me, like, take advantage of your natural states of motion when motivation and energy level. Like, when you work in small, discrete packets, and you're thinking about maximizing the return on your attention, the amount of deep focus you have, the more you can flow with where your motivation and where your mood is naturally taking you, the less you're going to struggle to get into flow. The more flow you're going to have, the higher leverage that time working, quote unquote, is going to be for you. So with all that highfalutin philosophical stuff in mind, some tactical workflow strategies. So Tiago has 16 that he lays out in the final post in the Just in Time series. Some of them just didn't make sense to me, and a few of them didn't feel really important to me. So using my intuition, the ones that I pulled out were these. Headings first. So to me, that's just an outline, like whether it's for a project and you're just kind of writing the notes,
yeah,
or the step 1, 2, 3 at a high level. Don't try to detail every 100 steps. That's going to take you from A to B. But just it's a piece of creative project where you're, hey, here are our 10 bullet points for this podcast, or here are the general 5 steps for this project. Headings first makes it easy to help you discover, oh yeah, cool, this is the next thing that I need to do once I'm done making this headings first thing. Or you make the headings first because you have 10 minutes to do it, go have dinner with your wife, and then you come back and you've got your headings to then think through a little bit more.
Sure.
Number 2, status summary. So this is when you're done. For me, for David Allen, this would be always having that next action ready, yeah, for mm-hmm. yourself in the system. If you're making notes like this, you could say, hey, here's where I left off. I left off with the just-in-time management number 6. Or if you're in the middle of writing a blog post, you can give yourself that note of like, here's where I left off. Here's what I was thinking. Status summary is a way of making a discrete packet out of something that maybe is half formed by telling yourself, here's where I was. Here's where I was thinking I should go next. So that when you come back to it, you've got those handles to get yourself back in.
Right.
Number 3, meta plan. Sort of like making headings first, but this is even a level like more granular. Like if you're like, hey, I have this project, update website.
Well, no, update is an action word. So that was actually one of the things I did when I revised this, is I was like, make the project title at least outcome oriented.
Yeah.
Right.
With some level of action to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why a lot of things have like lingered in various states of incomplete. And that actually even led to me creating other categories of project folders, like, oh, this is ongoing.
Yeah. Yeah. Jesus. What a way to get things lost forever.
Or yeah. What a way to never finish things.
Yeah. Yeah. Ongoing. What does that mean? But the meta plan.
It means it's not going on.
It means it's not going. Exactly. Yeah. The meta plan is like, okay, if you're even stuck, like you made it to the action verb in the title, it says update website.
Yeah.
But you're stuck on like, what the hell does that mean? Where do I even start? I can't do the headings first because I don't know the steps. Then the meta plan is like, oh, okay, look, just pull back to like, write down like, where can you find more information? Like, okay, cool. I can go to this project notebook. I can go to this website that had some resources on setting up a website, on updating a website. I can talk to these people about it.
Yeah.
And so the meta plan is just like, what do you need to make the plan? And just start there if you can't even think through the like 5 broad steps of the plan. You touched on with the action word, another workflow strategy, which is naming convention. So that can look a lot of different ways. For me, sometimes I'm like regularly kind of snapshotting some information. And so I will put like the date and then a label of like, this was what this web page looked like on 3/5/21.
Right.
Just so that it's like, and then every time I do that, like, I'm okay. I'm just seeing like, does this website look the same? Are they changing the design? Then I always name those folders like 3/5/21, this website, 3/6/21, this website, 3/7/21, this website. That way, when I come back into this, like, here's this big archive folder or here's this big resources folder of this website over time, that naming convention, when I go to add new snapshot to it, I don't have to think about it and I can easily quickly identify where I'm at in the system. Another way you can do that is like, okay, for things that are active projects or project related, those notes always have action word.
Yep.
Some descriptor.
Right.
Action word, some descriptor. That's a very thin and light system. But that naming convention can help you save that mental setup time because you use the same one. So you can always know what to name it and you can always recognize what's going on when you enter those folders. Another one is a table of contents note. So if you do get sort of a bigger project that has a bunch of things, and maybe some of those things are in your resources folder and some are in the project, some are in Trello, some are in Evernote, you can make that table of contents.
Interlinking notes.
Yes.
In OneNote.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love that.
So you can just come back to that table of contents and find all the related stuff. Brain Sweep, he mentions like specifically looking in your para system, but I would also add on to that just that good old brainstorming. If you're stuck and the meta plan isn't even working for you, just sit down with a notebook, like start drawing the ideas that come to mind around the project. If you have a decently well-organized para or other knowledge information management system, go look in there and see if you can find some stuff that sparks some ideas. Next one, dial down the scope. So this was something we were kind of getting at with discrete packets and with evolving projects over time, but like the scope of that website started with, for me, with 150. It started for me with like 10 things and then it expanded into 50 and then it ultimately ended up being 150. We did 60 of them because I was not afraid to just dial down the scope. Oh, we're running out of time. This thing's taking way longer. Cool. Drop it. Dial down the scope. Last couple of ones that I thought were interesting. Context switching, which can literally mean read Tiago's blog on your laptop. Getting a little burnout. Go outside and read Tiago's blog on your phone. Or it could mean literally like, so it can mean moving yourself. It can mean just looking at the information on a different device or a different time of day or something like that.
Sure.
Last one, function follows form. And so this is more of an ideas sort of thing like brainstorming where you're kind of playing around. But the idea of this is like, if you have a list of ideas or a list of like general steps in a project or something, or a list of projects for someday maybe. And okay, so here we'll take this example. Let's say you have your someday maybe list, you hit it in a folder in your area's notebook, so you weren't thinking about it, but now it's time to figure out the next thing to do. You're in your someday maybe projects folder, but you're looking at all these projects and nothing's really standing out to you. You can try rearranging that list chronologically, trying to prioritize it by levels of importance. You can try to sort of think through sequentially, does one project need to come after another? You can organize them by the objective of the project, the size of the project, themes, different things like that to just sort of take notes or ideas or project lists or something like that and reframe how you're looking at them to maybe spark some other sort of insight out of just kind of looking at them at a slightly different angle, which is sort of a more active way of just literally switching context, go outside, look at it at a different time.
I've tried experiments like that. Without knowing that concept, but just experimenting with like, okay, we have all these things that are legitimately evergreen and related to the core content that we produce. Mm-hmm. How can we integrate them into something that looks more like a system? So I found my most impressive note in Evernote. It's just called SSP Content Areas. It has internal links to about 30 different notes, and it has external links, hyperlinks to about 100 different notes. Mm-hmm. That kind of is in one place, like, so many disparate kinds of information, but put into this note that is actually a system of how all the stuff goes together, which I was super impressed with. So, yeah, that's awesome. That's great. We covered a lot in what's going to be over an hour. This is another thing that I'm happy to promote that we don't get any money for promoting. This is a pretty low barrier to entry to get involved in this guy's world. It's like $10 a month, right?
Yep. Yeah. The Para series, the Progressive Summarization series, just in time. At least a smattering of posts within each. Certainly the introductory post for each one is available for free. If you really want to dive in deep and get all the stuff, it's $10 a month.
Yeah.
Not going to lie, I will probably cancel my subscription at the end of the month just because I've gotten what I need from it so far. Maybe I'll let it run a couple months because I have gotten a lot of value out of it. But it's fairly low barrier to entry. If you want to get more out of it for sure, I would definitely recommend going in and diving deep. Plenty of notes that I took that we didn't even have anywhere near enough time to touch on, and he's got plenty more than the notes that I took because I use the progressive summarization method and I did not whole cloth try to pull things from his notes. I made my own.
Nice.
Progressively summarized.
So this is a very nice activity for your last day here, and it's been wonderful. You've been here like 6 weeks, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Well, that's just been great. Like, where are you headed to next? What's next for you?
Next, I am going to Austin, Texas.
Ooh.
There's a couple of friends out there who are moving back to Shreveport, Louisiana.
Yep.
And wanted to see them before they go because I also have other people in Austin to see, and they would be the only two people in Shreveport.
Oh man, I want to get to Austin. So many people there.
Yeah.
Alex Jones.
Elon Musk, Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
Dave Chappelle was at least there for a little while. I don't know
Others,
if he still is.
Other people too. Yeah. No, I mean, lots of friends. Joel Bine is there. Yep. John Bush, who I just had on my show, is there.
Yeah.
Nick Runlett. Have you come across Nick Runlett? He's a Praxis guy. I met him in Pittsburgh a couple years ago. He's awesome.
Yeah. I don't think I was. I think I was there, but I sat at like the opposite end of the table from him.
Nick was the first person that I interviewed last year in the Hi, How Are You series.
Yep.
So I'm going to probably have him back on the show in the next couple of weeks, and we can just eat crow together. In some ways, it would also celebrate accurate predictions in others, but mostly eat crow.
Yeah.
But thank you so much, Alex. This has been wonderful and informative and inspirational.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to get to that final level, the ultimate level of the para, and do some remixing to help myself synthesize and internalize this info and hopefully help a couple other people learn some things from the podcast, but also get excited to go dive deeper into Tiago and building a second brain.
Absolutely. Is there anything you want to plug besides your appearance on Portman Show tonight coming up?
Yeah, I guess I would say I'm doing content marketing work, doing all right now, kind of busy at the moment, but I'm definitely open to opportunities. Tiago talks about creating nodes in your personal information project management network. So I'm going to make a node and say, if you have any questions, need help with content marketing, then send them my way. You can find a contact form to reach out to me at alexgbell.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Alex. We'll talk more on the show soon. Hopefully.
That we will.
All right. I'll be up a little late, up a little late, 'cause they gon' judge me anyway. So whatever, I'll be up a little late.